Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's just gone past 2 o'clock. Can I call the meeting to order, please? Can I, first of all, have the apologies?
Apologies, Chair, from Councillor Hardy and Councillor Montgomery.
OK, and the order of business?
Is as printed in the agenda, Chair.
OK, declarations of interest. Any declarations at the moment? If there's not, can I remind elected members that they can declare an interest in any item on the agenda? That then takes us on to the minutes of the previous meeting of the 6th of June for approval. Are these approved as a correct record? A nod gets it, does it? Right, thanks very much indeed. That then takes us on to 5.1, which is the provision of the Council's scheme of delegation. Peter.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is a report seeking approval for amended scheme of delegation for planning matters under which specific types of planning applications are delegated to the appointed officer to determine. Following a review of the planning service, the scheme of delegation needs to be updated to identify the correct appointed officers who are delegated to determine applications. Additional minor amendments are also proposed to improve the clarity of the scheme for applicants and other interested parties. The proposed changes are shown using track changes on pages 26 to 29 of the agenda papers. The proposed updating does not change the applications elected members delegate to officers to determine, or does it change the calling procedures, or does it change the automatic requirement to report all major applications to the Planning Committee. The amended scheme would replace the one approved by Council at its meeting on the 24th of September 2013. The regulations require the planning authority to prepare a scheme of delegation at intervals of no greater than every 5 years. Amendments to the scheme must be approved by the Scottish Ministers. It is recommended that the committee approves the amended revised scheme of delegation for the determination of planning applications as set out in Appendix A and agrees that the amendments are formally submitted to the Scottish Ministers for approval.
Thanks very much indeed. Can I open it up for questions, stroke comment? Councillor Milligan.
Russell, I just wonder if there's a... I agree with the stuff that's in here now, but I just wonder if there's an opportunity here to look at the delegation that we've given, and mainly over the schedule of major developments. You'll note in the schedule of major developments, any application of 49 houses or less is a delegated matter to the officers. And unless elected members catch that right at the very start, I think it's within immediately the application date. And keep in mind there are some schemes where there has been outlined planning consent for some years, and these continue along. Unless elected members catch it at that time, it's missed. And it's become quite noticeable to myself that a lot of major developers are continuing to put in applications for tranches A up to 49 houses and 2 or 3 applications up to 49 houses to get by to bypass the planning committee. I just wonder if there's an opportunity for us to review what we see. And I know the schedule of major developments is set out in the context here, but I just wonder if there's an opportunity here for us to amend that, to allow, and this is just for an example, that any application above 20 houses should be circulated to the local members to allow them to call it in or to at least seek further information if it's required. And I just wonder if we could take that opportunity here to have a look at that.
I think you can, but I'll pass it on to Peter, and it might be that there's a note needed when we go back to Scottish Ministers with our scheme of delegation.
Yes, Chair. I mean, on that specific point about the 20 units, that's not a problem. We can set up a system where we directly notify ward members if we've received a scheme of 20 units or more. So the elected members have the opportunity to call that to committee. We can do that. Or if the members actually want to amend the scheme of delegation, so there's an automatic referral to committee for maybe schemes where house builders maybe deliberately split a larger site into two to adjust the procedure, we can take a view and say, well, actually, its entirety is equivalent of a major application, so we'll bring those 2 or 3 applications to committee. We can do that, Chair.
I don't think it's an automatic call to committee, but it's an automatic I think what would suffice is an automatic referral to the three ward members, and then they individually or collectively could ask for it to be called in anyway, which is the procedure that exists. The problem is, as Councillor Mulligan says, sometimes if you're not acutely aware of something or you miss something, it's too late in the process to actually get it to committee. So it's really just to cover ourselves.
Sure, we can definitely do that. Just set it at 20 units.
Yeah. Okay. Are people quite happy with that? Is there anything else on the scheme of delegation that any members had any questions to the planning manager on? Right, are we quite happy then to endorse this as scheme of delegation and refer it to Scottish ministers? Right, thanks very much. That takes us on to 5.2, which is the major applications that are circulated to members, one for information and any questions that you may have. And I'll just take my opportunity as chair of the committee to ask the first question, and that is just Peter, what's unusual and you don't normally see in the comments box is that an applicant, and it's the first application at call quotes, just saying that there's a land ownership certification issue, and I just wondered, has that been resolved now and is it clear to go on, and could you maybe explain to members what that meant in the first place? Because my understanding is that when the seminar took place on planning, it's spoken about that you can apply for planning permission even though you don't own the land. So maybe just to clarify that, if you don't mind. Thanks.
Yes, Chair. In terms of the general principle, you have a situation in the planning system where applicants can apply for planning permission on other people's land. And sometimes this is quite common, especially with big developers who maybe they haven't secured land from a landowner at the point of applying. However, the regulations require in these situations that the applicant formally notifies the landowner that that's what they plan to do and that's what they've actually then gone ahead to do. It's not for the planning authority to notify the landowner that some third party has submitted a planning application. In this situation, Chair, the application does include land which is owned by a third party, and I think it was an oversight by the applicant that they did not notify that third party. Literally, as of this morning, they have now notified them, and in fact that landowner has come back to the council just to reassure the council that that has taken place and they're happy for things to proceed. So in terms of Coldcotts, that's resolved itself and we can move that one forward.
Thanks very much indeed. Is there any other questions people have on the Councillor Hackett?
Thank you, Chair. It's the second one on the list, the land north of Oak Place in Mayfield. It was just to get a general update. So there was a previous application submitted, which I think, if I'm right, was for about 50 houses. And then they've looked to, are they putting in a new application? So will that go back to the pre-application consultation process?
Chair, in terms of the second one down, which is land north of Oak Place in Mayfield, I'm not sure where the number of 50 units has come from. There is an application in for 199 units. Part of the discussion with the developer on that was that the numbers seem significantly high, so the developer started amending the scheme to a point that the planning authority is saying, well, actually, that's quite a big change now. You need to actually go through the process again. It's only fair to reconsult local residents, etc., and start that process again. In terms of their original pre-application consultation, which they did before they submitted the application, they consulted local communities just based on a residential development rather than specifying exact numbers. So that part of the process still applies. It's just that when you've got into the detail, there's then a change in the process. So that does need to come in as a new plan application. My understanding from the developer at the moment is that they're just reviewing their options and are contemplating what to do with that. So that's why it seems like it's stalled at the moment.
Is that okay? Is there any other members got any questions? Nope. Okay. Right, thanks for that. We'll then move on to item 5.3, which is the appeals and the local review body decisions. Peter?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. We went through the background of why these reports come up at June's committee, but this is a regular update you receive of appeal decisions and decisions taken by the local review body. So these are on the agenda each time. The local review body decision made a couple of decisions in June, and there's three appeal decisions there as well for noting.
Okay, any questions, comments? Don't think so. Councillor Mulligan.
Russell, thank you. Russell, just to welcome the reporter's decision the appeal at the site next to Tesco for the large retail unit. I think this planning committee for years has been trying to give a lot more protection to town centres, and I would just welcome the decision by the reporter to support the refusal of that. However, it does bring the question as to at what stage does the planning manager or head of planning intend to come back with reports for members, especially with as many new members here, as to what actions we should be taking now to protect town centres. We're about to see the development of Shaw Fair in areas like that, and further development through Midlothian, Edinburgh, etc. What are we going to do to make sure that we're protecting our town centres? We've seen the likes of Dobies, which I've seen as a garden centre, suddenly developing in this great big centre. You watch all the developments like the Elgin Hawk and areas like that out in the suburbs, and then you watch the town centre areas and the restaurants and stuff like that shutting in town centres. So at what stage are we going to have another look to see what additional protection we're going to give with this development coming across to the town centres?
Chair, more than happy to provide special briefing for members for the committee in relation to that. There's a number of strands. You start with what do we see as the future for town centres in Midlothian? What role are they going to play? Maybe not just as retail centres, but more than that. There's the planning policy position, which does reinforce the importance of town centres, and that's coming straight from national policy as well. There's issues to do with then the constraining end in terms of out of town and the hierarchy of developments that would be allowed in terms of retail at out of town, places like Strayton. There's also the issue of environmental improvements in town centres and how town centres can be made more attractive. There's like the current master planning work being done at Newton Grange, for example, and the improvements programme for Penicuik, which is starting next year. Chair, more than happy to have a particular session with members to draw all that together and to take also members' views on the emphasis we should be placing in certain particular areas, particular policies.
Just on that then, would you be in a position, for example, to bring it to the next planning committee meeting and perhaps if members agreed to start the meeting, say, at 1 o'clock and have an hour just on the town centres and all the elements that go with that so that in actual fact, there was an opportunity to have an input into thinking. Does that sound okay? I mean, would you be in a position to get something for that? Does that sound okay to members? Derek?
Yeah, Russell, I'm happy to go along with that, but I'm not sure quite when officers are going to come back with a local plan that's just been approved by the Scottish Reporters and whether they intended to have a special session on that, especially for the new members. But it would be really helpful because if you have a look and you look at the local plan and you look at some of the developments, you know, it's not until you have a look right over the map that you become acutely aware of not just developments in Midlothian, but it's what we're going to do to protect against developments in East Lothian and Edinburgh that threaten the town centres out here as well. Russell, you'll be acutely aware that everything we try to do here, Edinburgh Council are very quick to jump on the bandwagon, anything at Strayton or whatever, they're immediately in with objections because it threatens the viability of their town centres, yet we didn't seem to be addressing it in retrospect for them. So I think anything would be helpful.
Yeah. So would members agree then that we can... Sorry, I've got it on. Would members agree then that we have an hour before the next planning meeting, we have that, so we can have a session on that. If it's a briefing meeting, I don't need to go through the full council to get a seminar because seemingly the standing orders prevent me from doing that, which is maybe something that we'll need addressed from some other committee. And Democratic Services, please note. That's a caveat to the local plan thing. Yeah.
Only to answer Councillor Middleton's question,
The intention is to bring the local plan proposed modifications, which have been issued by the Scottish Government reporters, to bring a report on that to Council, which is a Council matter, on 26th of September. And in advance of that, Peter and I will be offering briefing sessions for members in relation to those modifications.
I think you can see it's all starting to tie in, and particularly, I accept what Councillor Mulligan says, you know, particularly new members are getting thrown everything at them, and it's going to be an important time. A local plan has just now been cleared by the reporter, which will be adopted by this Council for going forward, which will work to as a reference document. And it's really, really, you know, in some ways it's actually a good time to pull everything together so that we can then move forward with a better understanding. And you're not coming in the middle of a local plan, you're actually coming in at the beginning of that, or the beginning of the end process, he says. So, good. We'll get that sorted out. Thanks very much for that. Thanks, Councillor Mulligan, for drawing that to our attention. That brings us... So is there anybody else got anything on the local review body or the appeals? Nope. Okay. Oh, sorry. Sorry, Councillor Carr.
Could I just ask, I mean, I'm new to this game. We had these two appeals in Penicuik and Des Bank, and I'm wondering, is there a major cost to these appeals? Because they seemed a bit petty to me, if that's the right word. You know, there didn't seem to be much substance to these appeals. And when we went as on a psych visit, they didn't look like there was much in them, to be honest. So I just wonder, are we spending a lot of money? Is there a filter system we can introduce before it gets to going to the reporter? And, you know.
It's a judgment call, I suppose, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of dealing with reviews and appeals, it's all done within existing resources. There's no extra fee or payment to a reporter to attend, so there's no cost in that regard. It's just officers' time in terms of making judgment, writing reports, etc. So that's how it's done. But in terms of the plan team as a whole, we are mindful and reflect on appeal decisions, review decisions, and look to learn from them.
In fact, Councillor Cassidy, you could actually say it's perhaps, dare I say, cheaper, because before it all went to appeal and it went into a Scottish Government reporter. So, in a sense, there was an on-cost to the public purse that way. We have to we get it a cheaper rate, I suppose, really, is what I'm saying. But what Peter said there just now is very important and very salient, and that is, the planning department look at the way the local review body operates, and they will look at the decisions that we take and will reflect on that in their thinking within the department. So we are doing some good. It might not just happen right away, but it will filter through. We then move on to the pre-application. No, we don't. Yes, we do. The pre-application, which is 5.4, is the first one. Peter, do you want to say anything on that?
Thank you, Chair. This is a report regarding a pre-application consultation regarding the installation of a sustainable urban drainage system and foul water drainage system at Easterbush Campus, Bush Farm Road, Roslyn. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposal at this very early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee at its meeting in June. The applicants are currently engaging in a public consultation exercise, which includes holding a public drop-in session on Thursday the 7th of June, which included holding a drop-in session. The report itself outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the development plan and material considerations. The site itself is within the established Bush Bioscience Cluster, and the proposal seeks to support the ongoing development of the Bush Estate in accordance with the adopted local plan and the proposed Midlothian Local Development Plan, and as such there is a presumption in favour of the development. However, it is worth noting that the consideration is based on indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made if a plan application is forthcoming. The applicant could submit a planning application once the public consultation has concluded. It's recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report. that any comments made by members will form part of the minute of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
Much. Has anybody got any provisional view? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. I was just looking at the site map. You'll have to forgive me, but I couldn't quite identify where the suds would be if there was a sort of a place on the land or on the map that you could identify.
Yeah, Chair, the actual detail of the suds in terms of the exact precise location and the form that takes would be part of the later planning application. At this stage, it's just basically advising the members there will be a scheme within that area. So it's a large site, seems a slightly unusual shape to it. It's just picking up the provision for the sort of Edinburgh University activity down at the bush. So at the moment, I can't give you exact location, but that will come in at a later date.
Thank you, Chair. Just to follow on, I know often beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but reflecting on some of the other sud sites that I've seen where there's reeds used and flowers and things like that, it's attracting bees, birds, these sorts of things, and certainly if there was an opportunity for the developer to look at such a development, I would certainly welcome that.
Yeah, Chair, I mean, just to make a general point in terms of looking at sud's provision, yeah, it's got multiple purposes to it. There is an aesthetic to it in terms of the way it looks, and hopefully people enjoy that, but there's also a biodiversity element to it. And, of course, importantly, it's about flood prevention and managing sort of runoff water, so it is multi-layered in terms of the suds provision. And you're right, across the district now, we've got some facilities which have been in situ for some time, and they almost develop into the sort of traditional village pond eventually, which is quite a good aesthetic to local residents. So.
Agree that report and move forward to 5.5, which is the application at HS12. Borag.
Thank you, Chair. This is another pre-application consultation report, and this is regarding a proposed residential development which includes community facilities, primary school, open space and associated infrastructure on land to the west of the current Hopefield development site at Hopefield Farm, Bonnyrigg. Again, the purpose of the report is to give members this early opportunity to make comment if they wish to do so. There has been a series of public consultation taking place, and that's still ongoing. The report itself sets out a provisional view which outlines the position which currently the site is within the countryside, but the site or part of the site is identified in the proposed Midlothian local plan, and the other part of the site is identified as a long-term safeguarded site. Those two areas are identified in the plan on page 60. The actual numbers in the local plan relate to 375 on the proposed allocation and a further 375 on the safeguarded site. So the development plan position is in favour of development once that local plan is adopted. Again, like I say, Chair, this is just an opportunity at this early stage for members to make comment if they wish to do so, and the recommendation is set out in the report.
Thanks very much for that. Open up to members. Councillor Mulligan.
Sorry for hugging this, Russell. Russell, I've got a question and I've got a few points to make, but the question lies around the master planning of this site. You have site HS12, which has consent for 375 houses. You then have the safeguarded site next door, which again is for 375 houses, 750 in total. Would you see this as being master planned for the whole site, Peter? Because I'm just looking at mistakes I think we made with the site immediately that this developer's developed in Hopefield, where effectively we started off with 1,000 houses, that crept up to 1,100, and it finally ended up at 1,302, and we ended up with all the problems that we ended with school capacities and stuff like that. So I'm just wondering if there's an opportunity to develop and master plan this full site, rather as agreeing a master plan for the site and a development for the site this year for one party, and then coming back in 2 or 3 years' time And looking at the next part, is it possible for us at this stage to ask the developer to master plan the full site?
I think that's a fair point and one that I would agree with, Chair. I think that makes sense to have a master plan or a vision for the whole wider site. I think the ambition, though, would be to see the allocated site get built out first. But I think you're right in terms of looking at the whole site in terms of a master plan, ensuring that it's designed in a way that you can understand the numbers, the education provision, the access arrangements, the landscaping, the open space, so that there's a plan there. I mean, the purpose behind the long-term safeguarding is one to enable not just the council but other service providers to plan in the long term, but also to let communities aware of what's going to happen and how this is going to play out in the future. So it makes sense to master plan it as one site. But like I say, just bear in mind that the allocation should be maybe built out first.
Just bring in Councillor Alexander first, and then I'll bring you back, Councillor Wayne.
Yes. I've just got concerns with the services that are provided there at the moment, if they will be enough. There's already concerns about GPs, about dentists, hospitals, broadband, schools, police. Parking is a huge issue at the moment because people from all over and from further afield come and park in Bonnyrigg. Having a huge amount more building in that area and beyond, it's going to cause a lot of problems in Bonnyrigg. And I think that we need to look at that as well when we're planning big housing estates, that we're already under a lot of pressure. The services are already under a lot of pressure. So.
Chair, I'm just valid points. Make a note of those. In terms of one of the benefits of master planning the site as a whole is hopefully we can look to manage and deliver that going forward.
I'll bring you back in, Councillor Mulligan. I was actually expecting Councillor Alexander to ask a question, but I'll bring you back in if anybody else wants anything included, perhaps in the pre-planning application. So there's an indication to developers about what the council's looking for in terms of the general needs.
Yeah, Russell, I think it's important, and I'm glad to hear the planning manager saying that he agrees that a master plan for the whole area, and we didn't plan one half and then 4 or 5 years later come back in and plan another half. A master plan for the whole area, and I would genuinely 100% accept that we need to have some form of statement on the timing of any developments coming forward to make sure that we weren't simply getting a green light. If we're capable of master planning that area, I think it's really important, Peter, again, that we learn from other experiences. There's a major demand, and not just Bonnyrigg, I think through Midlothian, for sports and play areas, for football pitches. They're already near enough at capacity. You see boys' clubs having to travel up and down Midlothian to try and get training areas. And it's important that when this is master planned, that this is taken into consideration. And no consideration on its soul. It would be great to look at this through the Hill of Bonnyrigg on sites HS 10, 11 and 12 and sort of see, well, is there an area there that we can get agreement across these developers. We also need to look at schooling, which I'm aware is in there, and there's an additional new school involved in this. My colleague for the SNP group is quite correct in pointing out that we need to make sure that the essential infrastructure is there. So therefore, we should be putting pressure on NHS Lothian to make sure that there are adequate doctors. I mean, I quite often hear we've not got enough health centres, or the health centre's not big enough in Bonnyrigg. The reality is the health centre in Bonnyrigg's rattling with lack of doctors, and we need to get doctors and other health professionals in there. I think as a planning committee as well, we need to be putting as much pressure on Transport Scotland and the Transport Minister to try and bring forward as fast as possible the upgraded Sheriff Hall roundabout to take some of that pressure off. And one of the areas that I would be looking for the developers in here as well is to look at what they're going to do about encouraging public transport. When they developed the Hopefield site, there was the bus route development grants, something I actually slated at the time, and it turned out to be one of the most successful bus routes I think that Lothian buses have got. So I want to know if they're going to be doing anything along that line as well, because we have got a serious capacity problem on our streets that we need to be taking care of. So we'd hope all that would be incorporated in, Peter. And the last part I will make is this, is that we got developer contribution for the last site for our for a lot of our stuff, for town centre improvement, for leisure facilities, etc. And because, quite frankly, they managed to jam an extra 200 to 300 houses in, there was very little contribution for that. I would hope this time we'll have learned for that and write that report on the amount of houses known in a cash sum.
Can I just maybe pick up on the green issue? What I've asked the officers to do when we come back with supplementary planning guidelines is actually make sure that developers have what you call a green transport plan, but not just a plan to say this is what we'd like, with some money behind that, so in actual fact you can replace the bus route development grant that was withdrawn some years ago, that we can actually get something like that put in place. And I think it would go a long way to helping to get people, as they move into new areas, to actually travel by public transport rather than travelling by private car. And if you look at it, the increase in the amount of people travelling by private transport is increased. And secondly, I just wondered, maybe it's not on the back of this application, but I just wonder if we should make representation to Scottish Government, in particular Transport Scotland, not just on the city bypass, because that's just one aspect, but on having some sort of infrastructure plan for the southeast of Scotland, because I actually believe if we don't do something soon, we'll actually just come to a halt completely, and we're not going to get anywhere. So it's really, if the committee would agree with that, then I don't mind undertaking that with the officers to try and get something done, and we'll hopefully get Transport Scotland to recognise that the south east of Scotland is the economic powerhouse of Scotland, and if we don't have the adequate infrastructure, people will start to go to other places, and that means it loses out our jobs and it's our opportunities for the next generation of children coming out of school as well. So I really do fundamentally believe that. I've done it on the back of this application, which is a bit naughty, I know, but I do think it's something that that we really have to address sooner rather than later, because there's going to be a heck of a lot of development coming and it's just going to make matters worse. Sorry, Councillor Alexander, you wanted to come back.
Sorry, I would just like to say that really we should maybe be looking to have a park and ride. I know that we would have to talk to Lothian Buses about that, and But given the amount of development that is going to be happening there, I think that is something that we should really be looking at and asking the developers as well to put money into that as well.
It's certainly something we can look at. I mean, I certainly know that Scottish Government, two transport ministers ago, they were looking at a park and ride policy throughout Scotland, and nothing came of that. We were actually very keen, for example, to get a park and ride at Lothianburn at that time, and we were put on hold because Scottish Government were looking at a park and ride policy. But it's certainly something that we can, if we do get a meeting with Transport Scotland, we can raise again at that level, and with the committee's backing, it makes it a lot easier to raise that if we're all at one about trying to get something done to alleviate a lot of the problems that need addressed within the Mid Lothian area. Councillor Cassidy.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick point. I have major concerns about the infrastructure, which one of them is the drainage system. We are bringing tens of thousands of people into this area, and the drains are from the last century. So we with the result, when we have heavy rain, the amount of water coming off people's driveways, toilets, etc., pop the lids off the drains. And for instance, outside where I live, New Battle Road is like a river, and it's sewage, raw sewage running down the roads. And I'm in talks with SEPA at the moment about that, and I've spoke to Peter about it, voiced my concerns. I think that's a major one, because that's a health hazard waiting to happen. Thank you.
Thanks for that. I think that's something that maybe needs addressed as well. Peter, you got enough paper on that to read? Ah, right, OK. No, right, go on. No, yes, it's open house.
OK. Also, broadband. When we've got new developments, we need to make sure that we get high-speed broadband into these developments, and also it leaks out further into the developments that have already happened and who do not have, at this moment, fast broadband.
As part of the council's conditions on any new development, it has to have broadband supplied by the developer. As far as the second part of your question, which is, of course, what about the existing folks, we've made representation to all the communication companies to start to address that problem, and we've been given reassurances that that will be done. Now, there's no time for that, and there's no date for that, but we have made representations ad infinitum on that particular subject. I think it frustrates an awful lot of members sitting around this table that it's broadband is very still very patchy throughout Midlothian, and we continue to address that, and officers continue to raise that at meetings that they attend. So it's something that's on the agenda, Councillor Alexander, and I can only give you an assurance that we will continue to pursue that until we get an answer to the question. And I have to say I get personally sickened about when you read other bits about all this money that's getting ploughed into areas where there's more sheep than there are people, then you do begin to wonder that that Midlothian seems to be losing out on that because we happen to be beside Edinburgh. And I'll just leave it at that before I actually say too much. So are we okay on that particular Bonnerig site then, notwithstanding we've talked about how to sort the world out? Right, that then next takes us on to the next site, which of course is still in Bonnerig. And that is, Peter, the next one, HS11.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Again, this is a pre-application report regarding a proposed residential development at HS11, Dalhousie South, Bonnerig. Again, the applicants have started their engagement with the public, and there are public exhibitions planned for August at the Lasswade Centre. In terms of the report itself, it sets out a position which advises that the site is identified in the proposed plan with a capacity of 360 residential units, and therefore there is a presumption in favour of a residential scheme on this site, especially when the local plan is adopted. And again, this report is to just take early views from elected members. And again, the report sets out its recommendations, which are similar to the previous reports.
And I take it comments similar to what we've already said, Councillor Mulligan.
Yeah, Russell, just want to reiterate my comments here. Neither the IGB or the Health Board have objected on the grounds that the capacity of the health service in Bonnerig, so therefore it's remit to them to come forward with how they're going to deal with these additional houses. We do have a problem with HS 10 11 and taking them together. But if you look at the additional traffic that's going to be in that road when you add an HS 12 and the master plan there are serious concerns for residents already residing in there that it's already extremely difficult to get out that bottom end of state and the Brixwell Peacock areas and that. So again, and I know I asked this question on HS 10, is it possible to look to see whether we could have a roundabout put in on this road or traffic light control, something to sort of give some sort of break to the flow of traffic to allow existing residents safe access onto these roads. And we also need to make sure that we've got the school facilities sorted for this to make sure that we do have adequate education provision. But again, we're back to the main infrastructure problems, the Sheriff Hall being blocked up, etc. And we need to be saying quite categorically and clearly that if we are expected to take these houses, then other people have to make sure that they make the infrastructure work.
Okay, and it might be something that you want to take into consideration, not just on this, but on the other site across the road. So there's a kind of, rather than a piecemeal approach, that it's done as a collective. Okay, any other questions? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Probably equally applied to the previous agenda item. It's a pedestrian crossing from this area, Bonnyrigg, to S Bank to allow foot access to the train station. If you're looking across the road now, I don't think you would be able to do that safely, particularly if you struggled with walking or had any mobility issues.
Yeah, that's something that can be taken into consideration if we're trying to get people onto public transport. So you got that one. Okay, anything else? Okay, right, thanks for that. Next site, which is the extension to the existing sand quarry at Upper Dalhousie Rosewell. Any members, any comments on that? Oh, Councillor Alexander.
Sorry, yes, it's just given that the main distributor road, that if there's going to be more houses along that, and as well as the big lorries coming from the sand pit, that's going to be a safety issue as well as increased capacity on that road, and that we need to take some steps to secure that and to make it safer.
And the vehicles, as far as I'm aware, come out onto that existing roundabout there, and clearly that will be a transportation problem when they look at the developments on the other side of the road at... Yeah, well, that'll be part of the assessment when the application comes in.
Yeah, Chair, that's correct. We will assess the traffic movements. I imagine, I'll just speculate, that because the site's operational, you'll effectively, what you'll get is the same volume of traffic just carrying on for longer as they move into the extension site.
Councillor Parry.
Oh, thanks, Chair. I'd welcome those recommendations about the volume of trucks and stuff as well. I'm just going to make a very brief point about them as well. When the planning was first introduced for this, there is a kind of grate system whereby when the trucks come down, it cleans their wheels. So they kind of go over a spiky thing and most of the dirt is meant to fall off. I think even though those conditions are in place, they're not adequate. And so I would like to see when the planning does come forward in full, a better system. I'm very aware that when the ground gets wet after a very dry period and there has been a lot of dirt on the road, it makes it very slippy for cars, and there has been one or two accidents there. So I'd just like to see something a bit more robust, really. Thanks, Chair.
A very general question relating to several major developments here. I've noticed recently some other Scottish local authorities are revising their Section 75 payment tariffs sharply upwards. I'm just wondering when we last looked at whether our level of Section 75 requirement is there with the market, and whether there's an opportunity to get more out of these various projects to support infrastructure.
Chair, yeah, the Section 75 payments are not necessarily on a set static tariff, as you say. They're based on a need to meet the consequential impact of that development. So some developments are effectively paying more than others, depending on their impact. So we actually assess each case on its merits, see what the impact is, see what needs to be met as a result of that development. So it does vary. We are, however, just because of the position of the status of the local plan, we are actually reviewing the supplementary guidance on developer contributions, which over in a few months' time you'll come and see a draft of that coming through to the committee, so you can start to see the numbers and the strategy and how we actually work all that out and have an input into that.
If you're referring to Highland Council, which was the one that was a It's very interesting to see what they've gone up to from where they were, and they're absolutely still nowhere near where we are. But that's not for a debate today. It's something that will come forward, Councillor Smith. Is there any further questions? Okay, right. Right, that takes us on to the application for planning permission for a park change of use at Park Retrospective at 32A Dam Head, Lothianburn, known as the Secret Garden. The Secret Herb Garden, should I say. That was the subject of a site visit last Thursday. Oh, declaration of interest, is it?
So I'd just like to declare that I've actually listened to the Community Council on when they've been discussing this, and a couple of residents, but I haven't expressed any opinions.
Okay. Right, thanks for that, Councillor Winchester. Right. So, subject to applying visit yesterday, last Thursday, I'll take you, Peter, first, and then I'll open it up to members.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the partial change of use of land and buildings for weddings events at 32A Dam Head. The application was originally reported to the Planning Committee at its meeting of June 2017, but was deferred for a site visit to take place. And as you say, Chair, that took place on the Thursday. The site is within the grounds of the Secret Herb Garden, an established horticultural business including a plant nursery, an ancillary cafe and retail outlet. The site operators have been holding wedding ceremonies and wedding receptions within the buildings and grounds of the horticultural business without the required planning permission and are therefore applying retrospectively to retain that partial change of use. The venue is accommodating up to 100 guests and includes live and amplified music within part of the site. The site is within the countryside where there can be support for those businesses which have a clear correlation to their rural location and do not detrimentally affect the amenity of the area or other local residents. However, in this case, the nature of the use, which introduces noise and disturbance into a rural location late into the night, is considered unacceptable because of its adverse impact on neighbouring residents. In assessing the application, the primary considerations are development plan policies, transportation issues, the wedding event's impact on the character of the area, and the development's impact on the amenity of other local residents. The retrospective nature of the application is not a material consideration in the assessment of the plan application. There have been 16 representations, 7 of which object to the application and 9 support the application. The details of the representations are set out in paragraph 6.2 of the report. The Damhead Community Council have objected to the application and their comments are set out in paragraphs 5.4 to 5.6 of the report. Since the June committee, wedding events have continued to take place with approximately one being held each weekend. And throughout this period, the council has continued to receive complaints with regard to noise and disturbance and has received further representations objecting to the application. The recommendation is to refuse planning permission.
First of all, I'll open it up to members that were on the site visit just for their comments, etc. Councillor Baird.
Thank you, Chair. I think how many of us went? 6 of us went. So when we went to the site, got a full view of the issues that were raised in the objections. Most notably the small area where they were doing the live performances, and also the area towards the back. That there was also a concern in some of the objections. It was my feeling that these would be issues that would be quite easy to rectify, especially with sort of my experience in dealing with live music. And there are certainly recommendations that we could put forward that would, I think, it appease most of the objections, if not all.
Anybody else on the site visit want to comment at this point? Councillor Hackett.
Thank you, Chair. Similar to Councillor Baird's comments, I think if I were one of the neighbours, I would be hugely concerned about the activity and what was a quiet piece of land now being used for regular weekend events. Weddings can be noisy, and equally, if you're running these events, you don't want to be going around telling everyone to be quiet, because that would sort of take a lot of the fun out of it. But it seemed to me that with certain conditions, there could be the opportunity to find a happy medium between the neighbours and the application that's being proposed.
Open up to Councillor Cassidy.
I would agree with both those comments. I think that with some stipulations and some recommendations, it could be made very pleasant sight.
Okay, I'll open it up. Anybody else that wasn't on the visit want to comment on it? Councillor.
I understand that already there is a business there attracting visitors to the Secret Herb Garden and to the cafe. I wondered if there was going to be any further building development to accommodate the wedding business, or is it just using the existing development?
Chair, the actual proposed activity through this planning application is reusing existing structures and buildings on site. They've had to amend and modify some of those structures, for example, the venue where they hold music or have the music. They've been doing some noise attenuation measures internally in terms of the structure, but it's not a new structure, so it's modifying existing buildings and structures.
Peter, could I maybe ask a question regarding retrospective application? If you look through the history of this, everything seems to be, not everything, but an awful lot seems to be retrospective. In other words, it's been carried out and then somebody draws it to the attention of the council and then they look for a planning application. I mean, is there any way that if the committee were minded to go ahead with their application subject to conditions, and which I'll bring you in if that's where we're going, is there an opportunity to say, you know, this and no more? Because I'm a little bit frightened that, we address, for example, today, and then before we know it, something else has developed out. We're back into the cycle again of asking for something retrospectively. But I don't know what we can do as a committee to stop that.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, this Chair, because in general, the planning authority does receive retrospective planning applications for a variety of development. Sometimes it's through genuine ignorance, i.e. people don't realise they need permission, so they do something and find out later. Others just take a chance, I guess, and see what they can do. I guess in this particular situation, I think it would be a case of me maybe writing to the landowner operator and just making the point that, you know, if you want to carry out further activities, further developments, then you must get guidance from the planning authority beforehand. And although we can advise and recommend that, I can't guarantee it, of course, because the operator or future operators may just carry on and do certain things.
Thank you, Chair. For the benefit of a new member, what scope do we have to put restrictions, if the committee were minded to approve, what sort of restrictions, limitations, provisions could we put in any approval to try and address some of the issues that have been raised by the local residents?
Well, Chair, I mean, if the committee is minded to support the application, it is within their scope to put planning conditions on that permission to try and mitigate some of the impacts. For example, the applicant has said that the events are between May and September, so you could say, well, it's only weddings between a certain time period, May to September. You could, if you wish, limit the number of events, which reduces the impact. You could limit the number of guests, if you wish. You could set a time frame, i.e., is it from 4 o'clock to midnight, or do you stop the music at 11:30? If you stop the weddings at midnight, don't forget the staff clearing up. So the staff, do you want them off site by one? So you could start to put in these sort of measures. You can obviously also set noise conditions so that you try to mitigate the noise impact on neighbouring buildings, either through a noise limiter on equipment or on setting systems in place that if there's noise disturbance on nearby properties, that is a breach of planning control. There's also issues about, if you look at the report, there's an issue about long-term drainage, so you'd want a condition to make sure that, obviously, if you've got 100 guests, you want to make sure you've got the right toilet bathroom facilities in place, so you need to make sure that's dealt with. Some of the concerns relate to people maybe leaving the application site and moving into the part of the site to the north, which is closer to some of the residential properties, so you could control the boundaries of the site. So there's a lot of things you can do. And most of that is achievable. The Plan Authority can enforce some of that, but often relies on the help of others to carry that enforcement, insofar as that it's not obviously going to sit there every time there's a wedding event and actively monitor that. So although you can put checks and balances in place, it does take a bit of enforcement and monitoring.
Thank you. I'd like to draw on my experience of working in live music. When I looked at the building that was being used for live music, in my time, that's the kind of room that is effectively it's set up for a fall. It needs to be prepared for that kind of use. We're only talking about the implementation of some acoustic stage curtains. And there is like one top part that's open, like single, I think it's maybe even plastic windows. If they could be removed and filled in, so the whole all four sides are solid, and then acoustic curtains, that would significantly reduce the noise leaving the building. Another thing is certainly a limiter on the PA system. You could have it set up so at a particular time at night it steps down, so maybe prior to that it's 100 decibels, but after that it's maybe 80 or 75 to bring it right down. Your issue is though that you may find difficulty with certain types of live bands, so perhaps ceilidh bands, anything like that, anything with bagpipes, they can't be controlled. drum kits as well, there is only so much control that you can impose on particular instruments. So that would need to be more of a recommendation than anything. So say particularly like full bands may be required to kind of stop at a particular time, whereas more like a DJ or acoustic bands could be controlled later on in the night.
I'm getting...
I've just got some concerns about the road that goes through and past the secret herb garden. My worry is that people who have either been drinking and having taxis coming to pick them up and go away again, or pedestrians wandering out who have had a drink, because that road is incredibly unsafe in daylight and in pitch black. I'd hate to see people put at risk.
I suppose the two comments. Within the report, the transport issues are discussed, and my transportation colleagues advised me they are quite content with the infrastructure of the road. But I would say it's a fair consideration, so you just make a judgment about it. Yeah.
I'm getting a feeling that members are minded to grant the application. And if you are, then I'm going to suggest you make up your minds on whether we refer the conditions. We don't deal with the conditions today, but we refer that to be dealt with by officers under delegated power. We can refer it to officers in conjunction with myself under delegated power, or we can bring the conditions back to the next committee meeting. And I'm in your hands how you would like to approach that. Sorry, Peter.
Chair, just one other thing, just before you make that decision, just to bear in mind that there's still a number of events lined up. So between now and the next committee, there are a number of events that will take place. So it's just to bear that in mind.
Russell, thanks. You just brought to the fore just what I was going to say here, because the recommendations in this report are for refusal. And on policies RP1 and RP2, this application seems to be contrary to the policies that we have for the countryside. However, if members are saying that, and like yourself, the feeling I'm getting is members are thinking that the reality is that the benefits outweigh the problems with that being contrary. We've got Econ 8 policies to have to be dealt with. And I think generally while sitting here, neither am I a sound expert or a transportation expert. If there are no suggestions of way that this can be mitigated, I would suggest that officers should go away and speak to the applicant and then allow any objectors time to have any say as to what's been proposed prior to it coming back here, because there has been quite a traffic of information on this, suggestions, objections and support on it. And there looks like there's been some helpful suggestions being made by people who I think oppose this as well as to how this could be mitigated. So I would like to see it maybe going away and coming back for myself to give us an idea as to whether people who at this time are objecting perhaps have changed their mind. But I think we really need to give the local residents a chance to see, well, here are the conditions we're going to apply, because the planning officers are clearly saying it hasn't been demonstrated to the satisfaction of planning officers that there are mitigating circumstances. So I think it's critical that we allow objectors a chance to have a look at what we are suggesting and comment on that.
Councillor Muirhead.
Thanks, Chair. I've got to say, I was, not clear on how to go with this one, and I thought we'd sit and wait to see, listen to the comments the fellow councillors made on it, to see if there was anything that I could see that suggested that we should ignore the policies that we've set down. And to be perfectly frank, I'm not seeing that. Therefore, I'm not really comfortable with this. It has been recommended for refusal on the basis of it being contrary to policies, as Derek says, RP1 and RP2, and planning officers are not satisfied that the change of use would not have significant adverse impacts on the area. I'm not hearing anything here today that really persuades me otherwise to that.
Thanks for that, and I shouldn't be presumptuous if I accept that. It seemed to be that those that had participated seemed to be indicating that there could be maybe a way forward. Councillor Parry, you indicated to come in, and I'll go round anybody else that wants to come in.
Thanks, Chair. I was just going to reiterate what yourself and Councillor Milligan had said, and I think Councillor Milligan made a proposal to let the planning team have a look at some of those conditions. I'm happy to second that proposal. I think that the point that Councillor Muirhead is a point that's well made, but I think it kind of echoes what Councillor Johnson was saying about, this isn't actually changing the points of land, if you like, it isn't expanding it, and so I'm not quite sure what the environmental impacts are, other than in terms of noise, which is obviously a very important factor. I don't have the technical abilities of Councillor Baird, unfortunately, but I'm sure the planning team do, and I'm sure that some of those recommendations, particularly some of the objectors, I know I and other members got a very helpful email, and I think there is a willingness there to kind of find a bit of a common path, and I think that that's ultimately the best way forward for both sides, so I'm happy to second Councillor Milligan.
Thanks for that, Councillor Parry. Councillor Cassidy, Councillor Smale, just wait there. Councillor Russell.
Just on the point, Chair, of the RP1 and RP2, I don't think that these two conditions apply whatsoever to this piece of ground, because there's already multiple development on the ground. There's development all around it. There's the ugliest building I've ever seen, about 150 yards away from it. And I just feel that this is enhancing the countryside, if anything. If you look at what they're doing there, I was astounded. I hadn't been there before, but when I went in, I thought it was an absolutely beautiful setup for a wedding, And I feel that the conditions that we're talking about, as Councillor Milligan said, we should have a look at those and come back and say, okay, we can make this work, because there's jobs there, there's commerce working, there's a lot of good going on that site, I feel, and we shouldn't just sweep over that one. Thank you.
Just simply to say that where the neighbourhood plan and the community council are reluctant to have this development, I'm inclined to follow them, even though it's not obligatory in terms of planning law. And also in my general position was to follow the planning officers where so much time has been spent on this. However, if it is the will of the committee that we have further deliberations, that may, there may yet be an acceptable compromise. But as it stands at the moment, I would have to agree with Councillor Muirhead. There's really nothing substantive being produced that would allow me to vote in favour of the development.
Thank you, Chair. And just to obviously draw members' attention to the fact that the Council's policy and road safety manager didn't have any objections to this application. And the environmental health manager, although listed quite a few recommendations here, felt that the sound issue can be mitigated with certain things put in place. And that this, not particular, this particular committee, but other planning committees have dealt with noise in the countryside in the past. And after coming and going, there has been a balance achieved whereby people can enjoy the countryside, but in a setting for a wedding that pleases everyone in that area. And I'm thinking obviously about the people that live in the area as well. If we can find some balance for the sound issues, I think we would be most there. But I'm concerned about if we're going to have another planning meeting about this. You know, you're going into September, you're coming to the end of their season that they're referring to in their application. So I would probably suggest that we delegate making the decisions for the mitigation, for the noise, etc., to the chair and to the planning officer.
Thank you. This was, firstly, just a point of clarification. When we were leaving the site, I understand someone pointed out to me that the new film studio will be going in very close to that. Is that correct?
Yes, Chair, relatively close. The proposed film studio has been managed to support by the Scottish Government, and is the local government reporter on the local plan is seeking to have that allocated in the site, and you're right, that's just down the road.
Thank you. So based on that understanding, that so that film studio will go in the near future, again, having a little bit of experience in that area, knowing that you'll have several hundred people there over the summer, potentially. I don't know what they're kind of expecting for special effects and things like that, but you could have explosions, car crashes, all kinds of stuff. I worry that we may sort of wring our hands about noise from a wedding when a film studio is about to be planted but 3 feet down the road, and you may not even hear people if that kind of work and that amount of people are coming in and out all the time. And certainly film crews could be a much bigger issue, and again, that's probably why there was so much contention when those plans came forward than a wedding could possibly generate.
So, question for the officers. Knowing that there are three events coming up that would technically be going ahead without planning permission, what are the kind of consequences to the owner of the business if that's to go ahead in terms of enforcement?
Yeah, I mean, Chair, the local authority has a variety of enforcement powers under planning legislation that it could take. It could issue stop notices to stop it. It could issue enforcement notices to stop it in a set period of time, or it can use its discretion not to stop it pending the outcome of this process. And to date, that's where we've been pitching ourselves, insofar as that because we've got the application subject to assessment, we haven't been stopping the events. Again, I suppose at the moment I'm not 100% sure where the direction the committee is going, but depending on where you go today, I can then advise you on what your enforcement options are and if you wish to take them or not. But if the committee is minded to support it, obviously we would look to resolve as many of the issues as possible but not stop the events.
I'd just like to refer to Councillor Baird, actually. The difference is between the film studio and weddings is that the weddings will be held on 17 Saturdays next year, going on till midnight, whereas a film studio won't be having the same effect on a Saturday evening.
We're tended to go round and round here. Councillor Mulligan, seconded by Councillor Parry, has already moved a motion that we go back to both the applicant and the residents with a set of conditions to see if we can get a satisfactory outcome, and we bring that back to the next committee with a minded to grant the application, which will overcome the problems of enforcement, etc. I think there's a counter motion being moved by Councillor Muirhead, seconded by Councillor Smale, saying that they want to uphold the decision of the planning committee, the planning report, which is to refuse the application. Am I correct in my assessment there?
I'm not sure you are, but this expression, minded to approve, does that commit us? If it doesn't commit us, then I'm happy for there to be further discussions between the residents and the applicant with the view to the best possible case being put forward. But as it stands at the moment, there isn't enough to make a concrete decision.
Right, well, on that basis then, I'm reluctant to do this, but I'll do it to try and move us forward. We're continuing the application on the basis of trying to find the conditions that would satisfy both parties. And I think a lot of us are very aware of the email that came in this morning from the objectors with a set of conditions that might be acceptable in the event of the committee agreeing it. I'm minded to go and get the residents and the applicant to talk around these conditions, and if need be, we could go ahead with that. If not, then we'll just move that we either grant or refuse it today, and that'll be it. I'm just trying to find a path forward because, you know, the committee's between about where we are. Councillor Muirhead.
I'm not clear why there's a reluctance to simply continue it if the applicant is going ahead and carrying out the business anyway, and we're no challenging them. What difference does it make whether we continue it or no, rather than, you know, rush it through or take a decision and being minded to agree it here today?
Well, just on the fact that things have been lying about for the last 3 or 4 months, or perhaps even more longer than that, that before it came to committee, and I was just trying to move it forward one way or the other, whether it be grant or refuse. But, I mean, I'm quite happy if the committee feel they want to continue it, let's continue it, but we're going to have to make up our minds at some point in time, and that's why it would have been better if we had some indication to the applicant.
Hi. I've got completely confused. If we're content, I understand Kelly and Derek's motion. I'm quite happy with that understanding anyway. But the reason we would be continuing it would be for what?
Chair, if the views expressed at the committee are such that there is a feeling that there is still a way through potentially to try and achieve what both the applicants and the objectors are looking for here, then a continuation of the application, which is perfectly reasonable to do, the committee's got the perfect liberty to do that, mm-hmm. Continue the application for officers to prepare a set of conditions based on what the deliberations of the committee have had here and all other matters that they could bring together, to piece that together, to seek the opportunity for the applicants and the objectors to further comment on that, to bring the matter back to the next meeting of this committee on the 3rd of October. Is so the continuation would be to allow those matters to be further fleshed out and at least further taken forward. You'd then have a position on the 3rd of October when at least everyone had another go at it, and then you'd be in a position to make your final decision. But you'd be reserving your position by continuing, so you're not giving an indication one way or t'other. You're simply giving the opportunity for the relevant parties to further assess and come to a view on the matter.
Okay. Just is that so helpful, Councillor Johnston?
It does, but I just want to ask.
Well, it doesn't really matter, because that's, I think, what we're doing.
And so what we're doing is we would be continuing this to give both parties a period of time to have some mediation and come to some common ground. Then they would come back to council and they would, we would then have the opportunity to say yes, go ahead, or absolutely not.
Yes. Right, so we've agreed that. Thank you very much for your attendance, and I welcome you back on the 3rd of October to the next instalment.